Yes, we are here to discuss discharge and dischargeability, both using it as a shield and a sword. Of course, depending on whether you view it as a shield or a sword will in part depend on which side you are representing.
And there's nobody on the other side of us on this panel, so apologies to the audience for that.
Yes. I will pretend to be the creditor, but I'm not very good at it. First thing I want to discuss is student loan dischargeability. And I know most people think, what's there to say? Bruner, they can't be discharged. Most student loans aren't dischargeable under 523A8 unless there's a finding of undue hardship. Under Bruner, but remember, Bruner was a 1987 case. The three factors to be considered were based on the debtor's current income and expenses. The debtor can't maintain a minimum standard of living if the student loan is not discharged. And the debtor's financial condition is likely to continue for a big part of the repayment period. And the debtor has made good faith efforts to repay the student loan. Now, to some extent, we need to remember what the facts of that case were way back in 1987. The debtor in that case was trying to discharge $9,000 in student loans 9 months after graduation and shortly before the first payment was due on the student loan. So to some degree, I suspect that Bruner may be the result of bad facts, bad law. There have been a lot of fundamental changes to student loans since 1987. There have been changes to the dischargeability of student loans because during the Bruner time, student loans could be discharged if the first payment was due more than 5 years previously.